Let's go back to 1962. A beautiful blonde American actress arrives in a tiny Italian fishing village to die. Meanwhile, over in Rome, Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor are tearing up the scenery and their hotel rooms while making Cleopatra. Fast forward to modern-day Hollywood. A sleazy producer creates a hit reality show, Hookbook, based on online dating. His assistant, Claire, prays she'll hear just one decent, unsleazy story pitch. A young man from Beaverton, Oregon, thinks he has it. A film he'll call Donner! Exclamation point. Yes, a frontier epic about cannibalism. Maybe the worst film pitch ever. Add to this a former World War II vet killed in a car accident, the frontman for a grunge band seeking redemption at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and an innkeeper named Pasquale from that fishing port in Italy who shows up at a community theater production in Sandpoint, Idaho. What are all of these people doing in the same book? We're not going to tell. The joy will be in reading it. But we do want to ask author Jess Walter what inspired it. His new critically acclaimed book is Beautiful Ruins, and he joins us from KPBX in Spokane. Jess, welcome.
Thanks, Robin.
Where did this come from?
Boy, to hear you describe it, it sounds even more insane than it was, I think. It's so funny to trace the path of a novel, and this one, the path is so long. I first went to the Cinque Terre in Italy in 1997, about the time my mother was dying of cancer, and the place just stuck in my head. And the very first thing I wrote was a woman getting off a boat there, and she was about my mother's age, and I didn't really know anything else about her or what else was going on in the village. And I would put the book down. I wrote six other novels while I gestated on this one. And by the time I came back to it, I'd had some experiences in Hollywood. And I really wanted to write about the storytelling itself and how it connects our lives.
Well, then you just back up. You mentioned the Cinque Terre. This is a stretch along the Italian Riviera.
Yeah, it's an incredibly remote place. Some of the villages you can only reach by train or boat. It's these five small villages that are etched into the cliffside, and they're just beautiful and remote. I invented a sixth village because I wanted a place even more remote than that.
And these are places that still have some of the whiff of La Dolce Vita life, you know, before tourism made them almost too slick. So that explains sort of the Italian theme. It explains the, you know, possible cancer theme. How does Cleopatra get in here?
You know, I was looking for a period of time that interested me to write about this place, and I wanted to write about it before it had sort of been spoiled by tourists. And I found myself thinking about La Dolce Vita, about Fellini, about the 1960s and what a wonderful time that would have been to be there. And when I started researching what was happening, I found that Cleopatra was being made there. And I thought, wow, what an amazing thing to write about. It does sort of feel like the dawn of modern celebrity.
We talked to gossip columnist Liz Smith about this when there were so many magazine covers about Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. And she said, oh, my gosh, they have nothing on this time when it was probably the biggest scandal in modern human history. Elizabeth Taylor leaving Eddie Fisher, Richard Burton leaving his wife. They're both on the set of Cleopatra. Quite an amazing time. How much fun was it to write Richard Burton?
I didn't realize until I got to that point, and I like to leave the doors as open as possible for myself, and I didn't know that he would enter the novel. And then it was almost as if the way he sweeps into the book is the way he swept into the writing process. All of a sudden, he was in a car with Pasquale, and they were barreling through the suburbs of Rome, and I felt as swept along as they were. And I didn't want him to leave. I kept trying to figure out if I could keep him in the book longer, but but he wouldn't stay for me.
Well, but he is a connective tissue. Meanwhile, so is this Hollywood producer, Michael Dean. He connects both the 60s Italian story in your book and the modern-day story set in Hollywood. And then there's his idealistic assistant, Claire, and Shane, who pitches that Donner movie. Shane and Claire are together, and into their midst you throw this now elderly Italian, Pasquale. He's come to find that blonde actress who landed in his port 50 years earlier, and he tells Claire and Shane her name, Dee Morey. Can you read Claire's response to hearing that name?
Sure. Something about the name affects her, too. A crush of romantic recognition, those words, moment and forever, as if she can feel 50 years of longing in that one name, 50 years of an ache that lies dormant in her, too, maybe lies dormant in everyone until it's cracked open like this. And so weighted is this moment, she has to look to the ground or else feel the tears burn her own eyes. And at that moment, Claire glances at Shane and sees that he must feel it too, the name hanging in the air for just a moment among the three of them, and then floating to the floor like a falling leaf, the Italian watching it settle, Claire guessing, hoping, praying, the old Italian will say the name once again, more quietly this time, to underline its importance, the way it's so often done in scripts. But he doesn't do this. He just stares at the floor where the name has fallen, and it occurs to Claire Silver that she's seen too goddamn many movies.
Well, you know, it strikes us that, I mean, maybe this is like obvious, but that you're setting this lovely Pascal, so human, against the artificiality, all the Hollywood stuff we've been seeing, all the filmmaking stuff we've been seeing. He's so real.
A lot of times people will ask questions about, you know, of a novelist, and it always reminds me of the old Watergate question, what did you know and when did you know it? And I don't think I quite realized how much everyone else in the book is living a story version of their lives. They're almost looking over their own shoulder the way we often do, I think. And Pasquale, if you say nothing else about him, it's that he lives his life almost from the moment he meets Dee Murray forward. He lives it within himself. And I think it's a wild contrast, and it's a contrast in the actions he'll take later in the book, as, you know, over those 50 years, that one moment of meeting Dee Murray colors his life in a way that I don't think he could have ever expected, and that, frankly, I didn't expect when I started the book.
And I didn't either as I was reading it. A couple other questions, Jess Walter. Your 2009 book, The Financial Lives of the Poets, is, we read, set to become a movie with Jack Black?
Yeah, I hope so. The way Hollywood works, it's, and unless you're sitting in the theater with popcorn, you can never be sure.
Well, but your caution is understandable, especially having read your book.
Yeah.
You know, anything could happen. That producer Michael Dean could get involved. It could be
right.
An awful
thing. Let's hope not.
But as I say that, you know, what about Beautiful Ruins, the latest book? Because it feels cinematic. Are you thinking that as you're writing it?
I never am. People will sometimes say, what actors were you envisioning? And if I stopped to do that, it would frankly ruin it for me.
Well, I would just love to see who would play, as somebody played, you know, Hemingway in a Woody Allen movie, who would play Richard
right.
Burton, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I became so interested in him, that, and the title, of course, comes from a description of him in his 50s as a beautiful ruin. And for me, there was a really key point when Laurence Olivier asked him, he said, you will, of course, have the choice of whether you want to be an actor or a household name. And I found that to be such a fascinating question. And for me, so impressed by this young actor and wondering what had happened if he'd been able to reject all those trappings of celebrity. I think, you know, more and more, we don't even see that choice anymore. Fame has become an element unto itself that sort of trumps art. And so the book really sort of channeled that question that Richard Burton ponders in the center of the book.
That's Jess Walter. The book is Beautiful Ruins. And by the way, that description was from Louis Menand in The New Yorker of Richard Burton. And I see Russell Crowe.
I'll get my people on that right
okay.
away. As soon as I get people.
Jess Walter, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And by the way, our literary critic Steve Almond says that if Beautiful Ruins were a film pitch, it would be Il Postino meets The Player, giving us an excuse to play a little of one of our favorite scores, The Postman. Here Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us again here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.